jump in. I'm going to get you started. How many of y'all were not at the conference this weekend and still call yourself a Christian? All right. I'm glad for y'all to join us. I'm actually even more grateful now when people ask me to speak on parenting. One of my daughters, I have the grown daughters and grandchildren and all this. One of my daughters is married. Her husband's father is a pediatrician who posts on social media about parenting dynamics all the time. Their other granddad is me. Guess who they never ask their opinion about parenting? Me and my fellow grandfather were like the parenting experts in Mississippi, and our own children don't want to hear what we have to say. So thank you for wanting to hear what I have to say. It's gratifying to me. All right, so what we're going to do is kind of free-for-all questions about parenting. I want to begin with this. He covered most of my stuff, my website, podcast, social media, and the books, and you can whatever like that. All right. As we talk about parenting, and as you ask me questions, or as we try to address some of what kids need, etc., I love that we have the background music to remind us why we're here. My book has two points. And one is, I want to teach you all I can about parenting. But the second point is almost more important to me, and it's what I want to begin with. And that is, throughout my career, I have seen parents want to learn how to take care of their kids and be concerned about making sure they don't, you know, harm their kids. What I've found as I've helped parents for 36 years is that parenting advice and parenting help is great, but our culture lives in a sense of what I call psychological legalism. And that is, whatever you do, don't mess your kids up. This kind of the new morality. You know, and if you don't parent just right, you know, they'll become codependents or dysfunctional, and one day they'll grow up and write a tell-all book about your parenting, you know, called Family of Fear, you know. And one day it'll become a Lifetime movie, you know, with Lindsay Wagner as you, you know. So one of the places I want to begin is with this. Addressing that fear that we're going to mess up our kids is something we all live with. Here's the secret. Parenting is not a task that you better do right or not. Parenting is a relationship. Now, let me ask you, what do you do in relationships when you screw up? Because I promise you, in your relationships with your spouse and in your relationship with your kids or with your friends, you'll mess up. What do we do when we mess up in a relationship? We swing back in and we repair. All right, and in essence, what you could say is that the flow, the dance of healthy relationship is love, fail, repair. And we do that in all relationships. And here's the cool part. I call it the grace effect. God invented this. Love that is imperfect, in which I even let you down, but then I'm humble or repentant or vulnerable and I swing in and repair it. With humans, love that's broken and repaired actually becomes better love. So, as we think about parenting, sure, I want to tell you all the great ways to parent, but if we're not careful, you'll just turn that to another parenting prison of, oh, well, John Cox says we better do that. Well, let me tell you, in the background of that, God invented this thing called grace and restoration and healing, and as we swing into our kids and repair it, we can restore those injuries. Now, the fun thing is that the research supports this. There was this pediatrician in the 20th century named Winnicott, D.W. Winnicott, and he did longitudinal studies on how parents parented and how their kids turned out. It was a long study, all right? So at the end of it, he went around and he, like, you know, tried to check in on all the kids who had perfect parents, okay? And it turned out that those kids were kind of weird, okay? I mean, what would you be like if your parents had been perfect, all right? And then he went back and he thought, I'm going to find out What's going on? What are the kids who are functioning the best? And look back on how their parents were like. And when he did the research, he found out that their parents, there was nothing special. They loved their kids. They dropped the ball, but they repaired with their kids. They gave their kids their heart, but sometimes they blew it. But they swung back in. And what he called them was good enough parents. It's the name of my podcast. And within that context of safety and grace, that being good enough and being able to repair our screw-ups. Now, let's answer parenting questions. I'm going to start with a question. Yesterday, somebody said, since you were here at the conference, if you want to text John a question, you can go ahead and do that. I'm going to answer this one. We talked about how children and adults, too, often will do our feelings. We talked about how a hallmark of adulthood is the ability to have a feeling. I want to yell at you because you made me mad, but not do that feeling, all right? Now, we said one of the reasons we're like that is because we, at one point in our lives, were children, and children are by definition concrete. We said yesterday in the conference that children are concrete thinkers. That's why they don't talk about the concept of threeness on Sesame Street. They talk about three cookie, okay? They're concrete. But kids are concrete feelers too, which means if you don't do what they want at the checkout aisle, they don't go, you know, I really wanted that Zagnut, and now I feel angry and a little sad, and I'm sharing my... No, they're just like, bah! They do their feelings on the floor, right? So we were talking about the importance of adults growing in our ability to not do our feelings. Go listen to the recording. But this person's question is, with a child age 5 or 6 who is still doing their emotions, how do we respond? That's a great question. And at 5 and 6, I would expect that they still would be doing their feelings. If you can get them to stop doing their feelings by 22, You're on the winner's roster. You're in the podium. What are we watching now? You'll get the gold medal, all right? Just shoot for 22. 5 or 6, no way. All right, now, what needs to happen to help kids learn to have feelings and not do them? Let's talk about that a second. We talked as a theme for the conference about adult heart growth. And even the way God relates to us, we talked about combination of love and limits. And you need both of these to address a child with a lot of emotion, especially some children are just sort of born more histrionic. You know, you have one who's just more the, you know, and she'll cry all day. You know, and the emotions kind of define them. What we want to do is I want you to begin seeing emotion as a particular thing to help them tame. Now, we're going to do that with two ways. The love part, and that is not necessarily in this order. The love part is going to do a couple of things. It's going to say, I care. Oh my gosh, I know you're so mad or so sad that you had to share your toy. I didn't want to share it. Now, we need to connect with feelings. We need to care about them. I get it. Trying it on and what we called this weekend being with, if I get it and embrace it, so like, oh my gosh, don't be a crybaby. Step one is I want to make room for, I get it, it is hard. We said this weekend that even adult growth, we metabolize our feelings as we are connected, all right? Now, the second piece is, I get it, I care, but if you're going to hit them, you're going to go to timeout. In other words, we're going to hear the feeling, the love part, but no feeling. Remember out of control behaviors that we talked about yesterday? No out of control behaviors, which most children's behaviors are, gets better unless there's a literal limit on it. I care that you're upset. You can be, what we used to always say is you can be angry, you can't hit your sister. All right? So, and if you do, there will be consequences. So with a child who's doing their feelings, there needs to be limits set on them. But if that's all you do, you leave them with the feelings untamed. Now, let me add one more piece to this love thing that's really cool. I love to do with kids what I call mentalizing their feelings. All right, see, the secret is this. Kid doesn't know they're feeling anything. Feelings aren't feelings to kids. Feelings are things. A kid doesn't say, I'm feeling fear about going to school. They're like, I don't want to go to school. Or something bad will happen at school. For them, feelings are a thing. And as we start actually naming them, with a kid who has school fear, I love objectifying that feeling for them. And that sounds like this. Dude, I know that school can be scary. And what you're feeling about that, I know that fear guy. I love to objectify fear. That fear guy's telling you all sorts of scary stories about that, what's going to happen at school. And what you're doing is you're bringing it up here more to their frontal lobe. And that's where we learn to be able to have a feeling and not do it. And the more you ally with that kid about that fear of school, the more he has an advocate and it'll settle down. Same thing with hitting your sister. I really care. I know you're angry. I know you made her mad. And you are angry, but you can't hit your sister. So we're connecting with them. We're creating mental categories. And we're setting literal limits. And literal limits, since kids are concrete, is where they learn to contain that behavior, right? I remember one of mine, my most histrionic, walked in our bedroom one day, and she said, I am really angry at Callie, and I'm not going to hit her. And we're like, yeah, okay. Next question.
Yesterday, you talked about shame and unshaming your children.
Yes.
And I think I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you teach your small children about sin without shaming them? Hmm? Like, that feels, maybe because I'm a black and white thinker, but, or just Reformed theology. I just wanted you to speak on that a little bit.
All right. Everybody hear the question? Here's my thoughts on it. Let's begin again with the dynamic that kids are real concrete, all right? And the dynamic of the notion of morality as sin is a pretty big step for them, period, all right? Initially when kids are learning about morality, it's very black and white, very right and wrong. All right, but we want to begin teaching them about what is life-giving and what is harmful. So my thinking on that is one day I want them at the place where they can understand sin as any want of conformity or transgression of the law of God. Yes, I grew up a Presbyterian. right now, I want to teach them more about connection. Let's do love and limits. I want to teach them more about loving connection and kindness with concrete limits. And that would sound more like this. If you hit your brother, that hurts him. And it's really important to us and to God that we not hurt each other. Because that hurts us. That harms us. So we're going to need to put you in time out if you can't stop that. And I know you're angry, but if you're going to hit, that's hurtful. I would go first with hurt. I'd go first with the relational dynamic. You know, I was talking yesterday about how God's law, in its essence, is not just about do good. It's about this is what will bring you life. And that's our secret passageway. We get to bring in God's way without all the complexities and abstractions of, you know, now stop that. That's a sin. They don't know what that really means at first anyway. I want to say, stop that or you're going to time out. In other words, that's a concrete thing for them. But also, I want to feed into that the dynamic of we treat each other in these life-giving ways that God calls us to and that Christ calls us to because he loves us and this is how we love each other. And you start building this dynamic of we're doing this out of what it looks like to relate like he does. And then you can punch in the doctrines of sin or those kind of dynamics later on. That's how I tend to think about it. And notice in any of that, there's no shame. It's like you hurt somebody, and if they go, I'm so bad, I always hurt people, you unshame them. You're like, you know, doesn't it stink how we always hurt people? Remember how I barked at you last night? We all do that. And that's why Jesus takes care of us. And you can unshame them in that sense. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go real practical. So we have one child who, with certain consequences, just really feels it. You know, it's just like, oh, wow, I'm going to be really disappointed not to do this, and it's a real deterrent.
You mean it really kind of has an impact, like,
yeah,
ouch.
Yeah, big impact, you know, and when it happens, you know, they feel bad. I won't say which one's which, but there's another child that just will call your bluff, and it's like, you know, it can be...
Are you bluffing?
Well, I mean, it's like... I'm going to throw all
Let's
your
just
toys
start
away.
There.
It's like, you know, we're going to get rid of your most favorite upcoming event, you know, whatever it is. And I guess the question is, you know, do I find myself getting into a bad pattern of just trying to seek out something even more severe in the moment to try to get their attention?
Yeah.
And it kind of becomes me versus them a little bit. But do you have any practical
Will you work with me a little more on it?
What was that?
Yeah. Will you work with me? Sure. All right. How old's the kid?
6.
And what sort of crimes is he committing? He or she, which is it?
She.
She. What sort of crimes is she committing?
Probably one of the big ones is not going to bed when it's time to go to bed. You know, not staying in bed. Maybe even waking up siblings just to make sure that we know that, you know, she doesn't want to go to bed.
Yeah. And consequences that you've tried that she doesn't care about?
In the moment, you know, things like you might have a play date coming up with a friend that we're going to have to cancel tomorrow if you can't go to bed, you know. And we've also tried things like...
Well, and what would she do with that?
I don't care.
I'll just miss the play date.
Just in the moment. Yeah, you take it away. Fine. You know, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
All right. Give me another consequence.
We've tried, you know, favorite toy going in timeout. And in the moment, again, it just like, I think she just kind of digs in, you know, and just.
How much do you see anger as an issue in her in life in general?
I don't think she's.
As you're describing what can start to feel like a bit, this isn't just a discipline issue. You're describing what's starting to sort of smell like a power struggle. It's like, really? What else you got?
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
I'm going to win, buddy.
For sure.
All right. Now, that kid is feeling something besides, I don't want to go to sleep. You feel any sort of an aggressive pushback as a theme for her in general, other contexts?
I don't know. I don't think so. I just think it's the way I've always felt like it is, you know, with I described it as like if a horse ever didn't want to be ridden, they could just decide they're powerful than you. And if they ever call your bluff, you know, it's like, what are you going to do about it?
And but I haven't heard anything you've said that's a bluff yet.
Yeah.
You have been creating consequences and following through with them.
Yep.
And she's just like, missed the play date, no problemo. And you say you felt inclined to increase
upset.
The...
She's upset at the time, like when she doesn't get to go. But it's just then...
She what?
She's upset when she doesn't get to go.
Okay.
But it's just then when we come back to bedtime again, that all kind of goes out the window. It's like, in the moment is much more important than her future self.
Okay. All right. Let me take a couple of shots at that. Number one, if you read my book, I comment in the book that one place that Norm and I really like felt like idiots and failures were on the dynamic of helping your children stay in bed and go to sleep. I say in the book, notice there's no chapter in this book on helping your children go to bed and stay asleep. I mean, what is it Clint Eastwood says? A man's got to know his limitations, okay? So I'll take a best shot at it. All right. First, since it smells like a power struggle means the child is now more concerned with you not winning and getting their way than they are with being a kid and learning their lesson, okay? Like, you'll see this with teenagers. You can, like, ground them from the world, and they're like, fine. You know, and they, next thing you know, they were sneaking out the window. And so you nail the window shut. So they build a meth lab in the basement. You know, it's like, they'll take it as, you know, the whole, like you alluded, you want to do more severe whatever. I kind of want to at least think about this. Like I said, I don't have a lot of confidence in this answer, but I want to give it at least a shot. One more question. Are y'all ever able to have is she ever able to talk about this out of character? So, Sally, what is the deal about bedtime? Is she ever able to kind of step out of character and actually talk about it? Like, what's her deal? Why is it important to her?
Yeah, she'll talk about it, and she feels, you know, I don't know. I'm, you know, she seems sad and open.
You almost said sad or scared.
Yeah, maybe a little scared, but I don't know. I don't know why. I'm sorry, you know.
Is she usually repentant like that?
Yeah.
Kind of sweet and sad?
Yeah, she's kind of sweet and sad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've been giving her a bum rap. I thought she was, I was seeing her as a gangster. Okay. All right. Well, then let's add a different piece, some more of the love than the limits. Okay. So, do you see? I asked him. Do y'all see anger as a dynamic for her? Okay. Do you see fear or sadness or vulnerability as an issue for her? Does that pop up anywhere else in her life?
Yeah, fear for sure. Yeah, fear. Yeah.
Where else do you see it?
What would you say? I mean, she just always is saying she's afraid of things. She seems a little bit afraid. She's very afraid of going to the other. She's afraid of going to the other parts of the house.
All right, let's play with that. All right, here
we
go. So we need to have a step out of character conversation. It's kind of like in a marriage fight. Don't try to figure this out when you're fighting. All right, like tomorrow night when you're, you know, cooking spaghetti, go, why do you think it is that, you know, and so you back up and have that bird's eye kind of view, talk about it, and say, it's hard for you at night sometimes. He's like, I know, I'm sorry, I'm scared. And see if you can help her mentalize any of that feeling. What do you think the fear is? Do you get scared about being alone, or do you try to get her to connect with that? And then say, we want to be with you as much as we can in that, because I know you're scared and you're not just coming out thumbing your nose, all right? You're coming out because you're scared or sad, and we care about that. But, all right, that was the love part, limits part. When you do it, we're probably going to need to kind of ground you from fun activities for a good part of tomorrow afternoon. And we're not going to fuss and fume. We're going to go, oh, baby, we know you're scared, and we know you're sad. We love you. But also, ooh, I just had a good idea. She's vulnerable and small. She needs to be empowered, too. You know, so we always say, you know, your children need to have that sense that you see their hearts, okay? Yeah, with kids who are needing to be heard there. But some kids, they need you to see their power. And she doesn't see herself as powerful. I have a little saying that children get their view of themselves from the eyes of their parents. And as you connect with her, empathize with her, we care about this, there's going to be consequences. Also say, but you know what? I know you get scared, but we know something you don't know yet, and that is you are strong enough to do this. And if you're not strong enough to do this, you'll kind of have a yucky afternoon tomorrow night, and we're not going to fuss about that or try to figure out a better strategy. That's just going to kind of be the deal. We have a nice, non-threatening, non-angry consequence. You just got to pay. It's like, I call it traffic cop discipline. It's like traffic cop doesn't come up and go, how many times have I told you? He's like, oh, here's your ticket. And I kind of want to go, yeah, you got to miss some things tomorrow. But we know you're scared and we love you. And I know that you can do it. We'll try again tomorrow. And create this more as a learning experience for her emotionally than it is a power struggle of trying to get her to do it. Yeah, I like that answer. Okay. Phew. I didn't. Yeah. Abby's asking about rewards. I talk a lot about discipline. That's just because that's the kind of guy I am. Shut him down. already reward them enough. No, I'm cool with positive, but here's the caveat with positive, with rewards, is it's real easy. It's like, you know, deal with rewards and closes the dark side. Okay, you can very easily slip over into what starts to feel like bribery. In other words, if you want to say, baby cakes, you've slept every night for the last week. It's ice cream time, baby. Let's go. All right? But what's dangerous about it, one of the reasons I don't lean into it directly, I mean so automatically, is because it's so easy for parents to go, come on, baby, go to sleep. We'll get you ice cream. Okay? And at that point, I'm bribing them. You can tell the difference between a reward and a bribe by how much dog you have in the fight. If I'm trying to, it's like, come on, you make good grades and we'll get you a bicycle, you know. I'm basically saying this is about me and what I want. I want good discipline to be about wisdom and what they learn to choose well in their life. So I want to say, this is the cost if you don't study. And oh, by the way, if you did and made good grades, cool. We want to give you a reward, kind of after the fact. Or you could maybe say it before the fact as long as you don't have a dog in the fight. If you don't do your studies, you're going to get around this weekend. If you do your studies, I'll buy you a new Game Boy cartridge. Do they still use those? Sorry, I'm dating myself here. New Atari thing, man. You know? But that's up to you. That's the key phrase, but that's up to you. All right?
Two-parter. First part, do you believe in the stereotypes of birth order? And the second part of that is my oldest, and I'm the oldest in my family, very smart, wants to be wise beyond her years, does all the things, is perfect, wants to help, like, and I see all this in me and in her too, but the other part of that is she's a people pleaser. And that kind of scares me as a girl dad. You know, you want to have these independent, strong women, and it kind of bothers me. And I also see a lot of, like, comparing of, well, you gave her, you know, I do have to do all these chores, and you did this for them, and it's not
Wait, say that part again. I lost you on that one.
Well, she compares herself to her siblings and to her friends.
That's what I'm asking. There you go.
Yeah, and so, how do I unpack that for her and help her, A, not be such a people pleaser, but also continue to have the drive that she has to do all the things she wants to do.
How old?
She's 9, going on 21.
In the sense of her insight, awareness, intellect, she's tuned in, she's wise beyond her years, that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing?
Absolutely, yeah.
Saying? Okay.
But also will be upset that her best friends won't, you know, or her best friend at the time doesn't want to talk to her, or there's a spat at school, or whatever it might be.
What does she do with a spat at school?
It completely rocks her world.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So I know where I want to go. I just don't know how to get there yet. Hang on. Okay. One of the things we talked about this weekend was in terms of let's use this model, because we just let this stay our model. One of the things we were talking about this weekend we talked about our development and the different kind of software that we need as humans. And we were saying developmentally, like the first thing that we learn when we're babies is we learn about loving connection. I'm with you. We're together. We're simpatico. We're copacetic. We're connected. All right? But the other thing that we have to develop, and it happens around toddlerhood, and that is I ask the group, and I'll ask you, what are a toddler's favorite words? No, me, mine. Okay, in other words, they start to get a sense of me, and that's a pain, but what comes with that is a sense of power in the universe. Now, what you're describing, and to answer your first question, yeah, I see some validity in the birth order thing, but I see that like I see a lot of personality style inventories. In other words, I think it's fun to know, we were talking about Enneagrams last night, I think it's fun to know you're a 9, But that tells me sort of, that should tell you your baseline, all right? Jesus is a perfect circle. And our growth and our maturity and our development and our Christianity is about becoming that circle. Now, a nine is going to have a wave like that. Great to know. Here's your work. Here's your homework. All right. Now, I might be a four, which means I have that shape circle. Well, at least I know where I need to work. The goal is not just to say, well, yeah, I know I'm a total like narcissistic maniac, but hey, I'm a three. You know, you can't do that. Okay. Or hey, I'm a first child. So that personality style thing gives you a baseline to see, yeah, well, then how do I complete the circle? Because Jesus is the full package. Now, what you're describing with your kid is she's really big on connecting, belonging, pleasing, engaging, and not enough sense of me. And the question I asked you was about what? Power. In other words, what you're experiencing working for her in terms of y'all's relationship is, I'm so amazing, aren't we great? And we're so copacetic and I do everything good and all that. But when it comes to having to have power with jerky friends, she's missing some of that me. Now, I think the solution to that could be manyfold. I'll just throw out some ideas and maybe you can help me brainstorm some too. But I had one who was like that, who was kind of a pleaser at first. I fired her from it. In other words, I think this is in the book. I would come home from work, kind of tired, and she and her sisters would be playing. And she'd say, how was your day at work, Daddy? Which I'm immediately going, that's kooky. I mean, you're 8 years old. Stop it. And I'm like, I'm kind of bushed, kind of brain dead, kind of hard. And she's like, all right, y'all, we need to be quiet because Dad has had. And I said to her, hey, uh-uh. I love the intent. Love that you're trying to give to me. I'm a big boy. I got your mama. I want you to go play with your sisters and like get in fights and pick your nose. And I want you to do like kid stuff. Your job is not to take care. And I want to look for the way she does that and fire her. Or you could play with challenging her sense of me or power. And she says, you know, I thought Pastor Davis's sermon today was just excellent. And you're going to go, well, that's because you're a Joseph. Anyway, don't tell your sisters. Challenger. Yeah, it was awesome. What did you not like about it? What did you disagree with about it? I want to look for ways to pull this out. Yeah. So-and-so says that, or mom and I were saying that. I'm interested in, okay, take something we said and find something that you would do different. If she's so smart, let's use that as a tool to begin helping her have to ask me and power questions. Now, lastly, when she's undone by her friends, I want to empower her like sleeper girl, all right? And that means I want to say, whoa, they really get under your skin. What are you feeling? Could she put words on what she's feeling? All right. What would it be? Give me one.
I feel lonely.
I'm what?
I feel lonely.
All right. Now, one thing I know about you, sister, is I watch you be super powerful around here. You're helping us, you blah, blah, blah. I think you're strong enough to go back in and push back and get back into those relationships with those girls, or push back on them when they're being unkind, or at least push back on those feelings in you that feel so lonely. You are so strong. And in other words, I want to help empower her, kind of like we did this, right? Different kids, kind of like this, different kids are going to be missing different pieces. That's why the book is divided into like 7 pieces of software that kids need, because all of your kids are going to have blind spots. Like, we're talking 2 questions in a row here about empowering. Some of y'all are sitting out there going, this is not what we're here for. You know, we don't need to empower our kid anymore. He's the head of the fourth grade Yakuza clan at school, you know? It's like, we don't need to empower him. But so different kids have different blind spots. So that's another empowering question. You need to fire her. You need to help her learn who she is. Push back on her.
How do you challenge the comparing?
Hmm?
How do you challenge the comparing all the time? They got this. I didn't. You were nice. You know, you. My life is so hard, but you do all these things for them. How do I manage that?
That's a cool question.
We try to give perspective, but that doesn't work. So.
All right. I'm going to step out on a limb and just start stalling. And this might be just really inappropriate. But I might say to her, well, if you weren't so good all the time, you wouldn't need to be mad at them. Sometimes they act up. Do you not ever want to act up? Where do you put that? Oh, I just want to act up. I might challenge her a little bit. And if you're going to live like so, you please us a lot, which is cool. But I want to empower you. You don't ask enough. You haven't told me your name. You don't ask enough, who's Jessica and what does she want? You're like doing all, and I would challenge her. She's that smart, that much frontal lobe. You know, go bird's eye and talk about this and say, yeah, it's hard when it doesn't feel fair. And we'll love you and help you with that feeling. But also, I want you to think about, you know, if you're going to live your life kind of not asking, what do I want, need, and long for, other people are going to kind of steamroll over you like your friends or your sisters. And you're pulling for power there, okay? Let's do another one. When do we stop, boss? 5 more minutes? All right.
Oh, and I will say, you can tell me if you talked about this yesterday, because I was, hi. I was here Friday, not here yesterday.
Everybody, not everybody gets the joke.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So when do you know, at what age around, do you look at your child and say, they need to go talk to a therapist and not just me? Like, what are the signs that that would be helpful, or, you know, a teen or a not, you know, where you're just like, I've done the things, I've read the book, and it seems like I'm missing something, and when do they need to go talk to somebody else?
Interesting. How old? Or is this hypothetical?
No, 10, okay. Our middle child. Because
okay.
I feel like we've read and we try, and we're not like perfect at it by any means, but I'm just kind of like, we go back to what you do in the book, and we're like, well, he's still just 0 to 60 and volatile and high feeler and high emotions. It comes out in sports and different things like that, and we're just like, I really wonder, and we've brought it up to him before, like, would you maybe want to go talk to somebody about how much you're feeling and doing your emotions? And he hasn't been anti that idea. But I don't
just
know if it's too
questions.
Early.
What is,
he doesn't
what,
have ADHD or anything like
what
that.
What do consequences look like for him when he's that
no
angry?
Dessert, no screens, no, what else?
Those are about the only things he really
cares about. That's the only things he really cares about, desserts and screens.
Somebody tell me you know my nephew.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that before I leave.
Lose
screens for how long?
I don't know. All day, all the next day.
Okay, what does he do when
weekend?
He loses?
He reads.
Okay.
What does he do? Oh, like he'll be really upset, but then the whole day he'll be like fine and be like.
He contained the anger at some point.
I think so.
All right. So what's the worst destruction from this anger? What's the worst fruit it's creating? He's beating people up, or I mean, like,
no,
what?
No, he'll make the team and his coach. He'll be disrespectful to the coach, mess up the team, storm off. And this is in fourth grade. This isn't like a five-year-old.
All right, so you really see his anger get in the way of his life?
Yes, because he's embarrassed. He, like, can't perform in the way that he wants to.
All right, you know what? This is not going to be a helpful answer, but I'm going to tell you what I think the answer is. The reason I got to doing this, mostly what I do is, almost all of what I do right now is adult therapy, individuals, couples, whatever. I was actually trained in doing child therapy, and I used to do a lot of child therapy. And what I started doing was I would save 10 minutes at the end of the session to tell the parents what I had learned in the session to kind of coach them. And I started realizing that was having more effect than I was having in the 40 minutes I was spending with this kid. And so then I started seeing parents and kids half and half, and the kids got better quicker. And then I just quit seeing the kids altogether, except maybe 5% of the time. And I found out that me and a couple of parents, if we could like get the strategy out of the way, I could teach you to do therapy all the time at home. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the question you're saying is, at what point do we need a really strategic intervention on this kid? Therapy is not the medicine. What you're talking about,
I need to fix his like outbursts. It's
no,
more like, is there
an
issue?
Them.
Like, does he have like some sort of piece missing, like for real? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like I just
right,
need
so
to make him
this.
Do better on the soccer field. Like, we're used to being very embarrassed.
My answer is this, and this is why it's marginally helpful. Because if you can find a therapist who you would trust enough to see your kid, all right, you can find a therapist you trust enough for y'all to go consult it well as well. In other words, y'all come to my office, we deep dive into this and really dig. I would do that first because there's
That's
always
helpful.
Some little twist we might be missing. But yeah. I don't hear anything about your child where I go, oh, he's got some deep psychopathology.
Okay.
All right. And it's not, and in talking to someone who's trained in understanding development and parenting and all that, they can make that even more certain for you. That was kind of behind your question.
No, that's great.
Okay,
that's
good.
Exactly
right.
What I wanted to
do. We got to stop? All right. Thank y'all. I have so enjoyed just the whole weekend with y'all. Goodness gracious. I'll close in prayer. Yeah. Father, thank you that you are the Father of fathers, that you gather us under your wing, that you have compassion on us as a father does for a child. If we, being sinful parents, give good gifts to our children, how much more will our Father in heaven give to those who love him and obey him? We ask for your blessing, and I ask for your blessing on the families represented here. We love you and we thank you. Amen. Thank y'all.